And welcome to another edition of Amana Podcast. Amana, once again, is a collective of people, places, things, and actions that transcend us. Exploring your higher virtues and what takes you off track and how do you get back on track so you're centered and aligned and living in your value systems. And today it gives me great pleasure to introduce the Ritz family. Say good day, all.
Good day, mate.
Hello.
So we have Thomas, we have Lauren, and we have Jenna. And I had the pleasure of meeting your family. Now I've got to do the math. Let's say close to 20 years ago, maybe around 18 years ago.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we met, I was coaching at Calabasas, and you, Tom, were coaching there also. And both you girls were training there. And so part of the discussion today will be about, you know, the journey of junior tennis and then going and playing college tennis and then furthering what happens after that into, you know, as you traject into your careers and lives. So, Tom, why don't you give us a little backstory of how you got the girls into tennis? It is only a 46-minute long podcast. So sound bites, please.
So obviously Mark knows me well because he just asked me not to be long-winded. I think an experience for me when I was playing baseball in college on Saturday mornings, there was a group that did gymnastics for little kids like 1 and 2 and 3 years old. And I always remember that. And I said, oh, my God, if I'm ever lucky enough to have kids, I really want them to get them in gymnastics. Not that I ever knew anything about it, but I just loved the way the sense of the body and the way that they were expressing themselves and then being fearless at certain times. I thought it was a great learning thing. And so as somebody that pursued professional sports, I didn't want to point my children into a direction and say, this is the way to go. Because you and I, we all know that if you're not passionate, you're not going to really ever attain what you could. And when we moved to Thousand Oaks from North Hollywood Studio City, the house we bought, there were 4 courts about 5 blocks away. Mm-hmm. And there was a local guy coaching there, and I signed the girls up for some lessons. And the lessons weren't very good, unfortunately. But the girls seemed to like it. So we started hitting, and one thing led to another. And then I ended up getting back into coaching full time. And they ended up being at a great place called the Pacific Tennis Club, which was just awesome in Westlake Village. And I think the girls can expand on their experience and all of that from there.
That's great. So Lauren or Jenna, whoever wants to jump in here, why don't you share a little bit about what you first liked about tennis? Or I know it's a long time when you're young and you're
out. Yeah, it may have been a long time ago, but this is Lauren. For me, I actually remember it like it was yesterday. Like I remember the first time I got on those courts at Wildwood with my dad. And I think I was just really drawn to the rhythm and the timing and the sport and being an individual out there and learning that just different skill sets. And I remember hitting the ball and the feeling of that. And I mean, I was 5 and a half and this memory is still very vivid with me today. And I kind of knew in that moment, in some ways as a young kid, like I was, that my life was going to change. Like it was so powerful for me, that like, I just had this, like, this is what I'm going to do. And this is kind of in some ways my destiny. Obviously looking back, I can say that now, but as a 5-year-old, probably didn't realize that, but knew very strongly that it was a passion. And and Pacific Tennis Club, as my dad mentioned, was just like a really wonderful environment as a young kid to foster the love of the game. I mean, we had Sam Querrey was there. We had a lot of great top juniors, but we were all basically like living at Pacific Tennis Club, just hanging out, being kids, but also having tennis be the real dominating factor of what brought us all together and what we had a lot of fun around. And something that I love is now looking back that all of those kids that grew up at Pacific Tennis Club still play tennis. Whereas a lot of kids that we grew up playing junior tennis either burned out during junior tennis or like no longer play tennis at all. And I just think that's so sad. And I truly think that the experience at Pacific Tennis Club was really defining in that way. And all of us had such a love for the game.
Oh, terrific. And what about you, Jenna?
Well, I told my father that I liked art more than tennis the first time I was on the court. So I wouldn't say it was love at first sight, I think, but my dad would take Lauren out there and I'd come out with my paper and my crayons and hang out on the court. And then I think I saw Lauren enjoying it. So I started playing a bit more. Perhaps I don't remember it as vividly as Lauren does, but I think I was just drawn to, I don't know, it's fun to be out there. It's fun to learn. I think I was learning fairly quickly at the time. And I enjoyed it a lot and I enjoyed the individuality aspect of it. I do remember my first tennis tournament, which also happened to be at Pacific Tennis Club. And that was quite fun. I didn't do quite as well as Lauren. I think she won the first tournament she played, but I did okay. and yeah, that's really what got me started. But I do always think that there was some division between my tennis aspirations and my academic aspirations, which made it a bit of a struggle in junior tennis when I was training all the time and missing classes for tournaments. So I think that was always something I had to balance. So maybe it started at the very beginning when I told my father that.
it's true. And you're not alone in that. I've worked with a lot of juniors over the years now. And particularly if you're going to play a really the highest level of junior tennis and then still keep up with your studies and you're both very bright girls, it's so demanding to do one or the other. And to do both is just a huge accomplishment. And in discipline. Now, one of the things I wanted to bring forward too is, Tom, you're a real student of whatever I think you throw yourself into. But when I came along, how old were you girls then? Around 14, 16, maybe?
Yeah, 14, 15. I think.
I think I was 14.
And so what you had done, Tom, and to your kudos is, we talk about how you coach a player and both you girls played extremely different. Like Lauren had two hands both sides and Jenna had a single hand, forehand, single hand, a backhand. So it just goes to show that you were working with what your skills were. But I'm interested, just give some highlights, Tom, of some of the things that you would go research and have the girls kind of check out to add to their training, because there was, we couldn't list all of them, I'm sure, but it was certainly a buffet of opportunity.
Yeah, I think, let me just comment for Jenna and not to take a deep dive in the scholastics, but I think that's the really difficult part for any young person pursuing a sport and being involved in school and wanting to be involved in school, not just being on the internet Laurel Springs type of schools where you do the classes, but you're not around anybody. That whole social aspect, was very happy that the girls could go to public school and be part of that. And they did an after school program and independent PE, but they still went to class at least 3 days a week and participated in elementary, middle, and high school. I think that aspect is really important because I think parents and coaches lose sight of the development of their child just as a child, forgetting the athlete part. And then as far as Jenna, I do remember one thing that I hope she remembers. I said to her, let the court be your canvas and show me how you're going to paint and what are you going to use, pastels, brushes, whatever, because I'm not an artist. So I think I really enjoyed listening to your podcast with Grant and where he talked about you have to be flexible with every student. Yes. And you can't, there is no cookie cutter approach. And there are coaches, famous coaches, that have made that mistake, that run academies. So I think it's really important for the individual to express himself, and it's not on the coach to say, this is how you should do it. Like if somebody did that to Roger Federer, we wouldn't know who Roger Federer was. But I think one of the things that was important to me as a parent, I had to be their main coach because of finances and time. But luckily, I was connected to the tennis world enough to search out the best coaches, and that was twofold for me. I was able to learn from some of the greatest coaches in the world, and the girls were able to know, hey, I've been trained and been on the court with Federer's coach, Sampras's coach, Maria Sharapova's coach, things like that. So they got the experience, and I didn't want to give up being a father. That was the most important thing to me. Yes. But I had to be their coach. So it was a balancing act. It wasn't easy for the three of us to make it work. And I include their mother in that, the four of us to make it work. She was a huge part of the support group and being available. But I think I learned a lot from being around those coaches. And so selfishly, I learned to be a better coach by watching them with the girls. And then the girls got this wonderful coaching. And that's why I kept that open. And that's one of the reasons why I was really happy that you took the girls on, because you were the only coach that I knew of that brought the mental coaching into it. And that was paramount compared to just the basic strokes and strategy and things that we all go through.
Yes.
So just being open, I wanted the girls to do different sports. And so they played soccer, and I had a conversation with Wayne Bryant, the father of the Bryant twins. And he said, oh, no, you can't do that. It's school, music, and tennis, not necessarily in that order. They can't do anything else. And I'm just like, okay, Wayne, you and your wife did a wonderful job with the boys, but I think you've lost sight of what it's like to be a 7 or 8 year old kid and do one sport every afternoon after school. It's ridiculous. Plus, when I played in Europe, I realized how developed the especially the guys' legs were from soccer. I thought it was from clay originally, but it was really from soccer. And I thought, yes. Wow. And then, of course, training on a soft surface. And then the girls did martial arts, and they played piano. They did other things. So it's not time to do everything, but I don't think it's a wise thing to sacrifice all the other developments of a child in lieu of a sport, or like if you're a prodigy with a musical instrument or something like that. So.
And girls, and whoever wants to jump in, what would you say, let's just stick with the junior career here, what would be, one, a highlight, and two, something that really disdained you from participating in junior tennis? And I'm not talking about maybe what someone else did, but something that really maybe took you off and goes, do I really want to do this? Because I think we all question, those question marks show up for us.
Yeah, I'll go first. This is Jenna. I think my answer is kind of two. It's the two sides of a coin, I guess, is the expression. So one is that we really made some really close friends, particularly, as we mentioned, at Pacific Tennis Club. We talk to our core group of friends from there. And like whenever we're in town, we all get together. And so we made some really strong, lasting friendships from that. Around tennis, and we're all doing different things now, but we're all able to come back together and really connect. On the other side of that, I think that the environment in the tournaments is sometimes not conducive to friendships, and it gets highly competitive.
Yes.
Particularly in the women's, the girls circuit. And so I think some of that comes from the parents, some of that comes from the kids. And so it creates a challenging environment, especially when you're that young and developing and learning who you are and all these things. And especially also if you're not really getting the school social aspect of it, the junior tennis social aspect of it can be really a challenge.
Yeah. None of those points. What about for you, Lauren?
So I would say for me, the most positive experience is that I think growing up, I was naturally a very shy person. I didn't feel totally like I fit in a school environment. But for me, like the tennis court was just like my sanctuary and very much where I felt my most comfortable self, where I felt my most social self. So I think getting a lot of confidence in a lot of ways from my success on the tennis court and just feeling my confident self actually, I think, taught me a lot of how to kind of interact and come into my own in a more of like a social setting outside of the tennis world. But I think for me, one of the hardest things that I struggled with was kind of my own expectations of myself. I mean, growing up, I was always at, I want to be a professional tennis player. Mm. And these are the demands and this is the expectation. And I think growing up, I had such high expectations that I remember at like 13 feeling like, well, I haven't achieved what Martina Hingis has achieved. So I guess being a professional isn't really in the cards for me. And just having those types of internal discussions and pressure, I think it made me pivot. I mean, 13, 14 is when I decided that, you know what, tennis is actually going to be my gateway to get the best education I possibly could.
Yes.
But I do think at the same time, like there was a grieving process because I was letting go of a dream that I had had for so long and was working towards that made me also very like feel different than most kids my age. And I was, you know, trying to kind of navigate what that felt like, but also trying to feel normal as a child in like a high school setting. So I think there are a lot of different elements. And I just think that internal battle probably is what, you know, led me to our great relationship, led me to insight, led me to a lot of different mental, I think, just, you know, programs and different things to really think about those things. But that's like a very young age to be thinking about that. And I think that that's a unique situation specifically from like junior tennis, because it is so independent.
Yeah, no, well said. And what about the transition from then junior tennis and moving over into college tennis? Share a little bit about what that process was like. The good and the bad, you know, and I could only imagine there was a lot of pressure because it's a very competitive environment to get into these really good schools. And I'll let you share about which schools you went for and then where you ended up. Share a little bit about that transition.
Yeah. So this is Lauren again. My experience was actually a little bit unique. I'm a little bit younger for my grade. And just based on different NCAA rules and things like that, coaches actually didn't realize I was eligible when I was. So based on my ranking, I mean, I think I was, Dad, you would know better probably.
But, well, you were top 50 in the country, honey.
Yeah. So, you know, I think there was an expectation that I was going to have a lot of potential opportunities, and those things didn't happen right away. And we found out a little late in the game. I think, Dad, you had a conversation with a Pepperdine coach, and he was like, I didn't realize Lauren was even eligible. So it really kind of shifted our perspective a little bit as like, well, do I take a year off and play the professional circuit in Europe? Do I kind of think about other things? And I remember actually my mom showed me a Christmas card that I had gotten, because I had gotten a lot of like recruiting materials in the mail. This was back when they still did it in the mail, not email and all those things now. So I remember my mom showed me a Christmas card of the Yale team, and I kind of laughed at her and I was like, me at an Ivy League? Mom, like, really? But you know, it kind of is interesting because at 13, I was like, well, I'm going to get into the best school. In my head, the best school was a Pac-10 school or something of that nature that had a strong tennis team, not necessarily as strong of an academic component. And so I actually ended up getting recruited by Yale, Brown, Columbia, which was an interesting recruiting experience. I mean, I also went to Harvard and Dartmouth, ended up going with Yale. And that transition happens a lot later than I think most junior players at my age. So that was definitely a stressful time. Yes. but I was really pleased with how things worked out. And I ended up not taking that gap year to play. So that was kind of my experience. I applied to three Ivy League schools. I don't think I'd recommend that for everyone, because that's not really a backup situation. But I think being recruited for tennis specifically, it creates a different dynamic when you're applying to those schools, certainly. So,
well, and if I can add to that, I know Lauren, her experience there, but Yale had not won an Ivy League championship in 27 years, and they won. And Lauren was the only undefeated player in the Ivy League. So let's put the cards on the table. That was an interesting experience. So,
that's a great achievement. And what about for you, Jenna, when you had to transition over into university?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the transition really starts way earlier than when people think. I certainly remember feeling a lot of pressure to perform well in my junior and senior year of high school. And at first I was doing quite well, many thanks to you, Mark. And then I remember I got sick and I ended up getting mono from sharing water at the tennis courts with people who didn't bring water. And then my rankings really weren't doing as well because I didn't know I was sick. So that was really stressful because it felt like such high pressure, like I'd been doing so great. And then suddenly I wasn't doing as well as I had thought. And so it made it really hard trying to think about schools and like when coaches are watching you, you're like, this is my chance. And it adds a whole nother level of being out on the court, which is already quite stressful to begin with during tournaments. So I think it starts there. But I think that kind of pressure only gets you to be more mentally tough and strong. And so I ended up doing quite well. I'd say during recruiting, I was looking also at the Ivy League schools. And then I also threw in a wild card thinking, well, you know, if I don't get into these schools, like maybe I'll go to NYU and just do like film, like no tennis, like maybe this is it. But I ended up also speaking with the Yale coach and applying early there. And I think I found out 2 weeks before the early application was due that I was going to be considered as a recruit. So I actually ended up only applying to Yale and I got in early, and then I didn't have to apply anywhere else, which was really nice. So that transition was really great. And college tennis is certainly different than juniors because you're on a team. And yes, unless you're playing like zonals, which I'm assuming they still call it that now, or like club team tennis, that's a different experience altogether, which can be really great. And I think the girls on the team were fantastic. Unfortunately, I ended up getting injured and I had wrist surgery and I had a chest injury. And so I stopped playing after my first year there.
And it's interesting. So there's a really top boarding school, which I know you're familiar with here where I live in Ohio. It's called Thatcher. Mm-hmm. And I recall giving someone a tour. I knew someone, a student at the school, and they were considering moving from Australia to Thatcher. And I remember giving that tour and I went, my gosh, this place is amazing. And how amazing is it, right? So I ended up teaching a couple of years back just the boys team to kind of understand, is it really such a good school? Are they really getting such great academics here? And the answer was yes. You know, I've done 12 years of upper education. I've got an array of different schools that I've gone to, and I was so impressed. I went, my gosh, I could go back to high school even, you know, you get a horse, it's all kinds of wonderful things they have at that program, although they are going through a little controversy from the past at the moment. Was your school, because Yale obviously has a real status that goes with it, was the school experience as good as you thought it would be, better, different? Tell us a little bit about your experiences at Yale.
Well, I think Lauren should speak first since she was the first one to attend between the two of us.
Yeah, my experience at Yale was definitely a steep learning curve. I came in not having gone my last 2 years actually in high school. I did independent study. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't in a class environment. I did one like college course at my community college so that I had whatever credits I absolutely needed for Yale's requirements. But I would say my freshman year was a really interesting experience because I had to not only learn how to take notes, how to write papers, how to do a lot of different things that I think a lot of my student, like my colleagues came in having been at private schools and were doing these things naturally, as well as managing being on a tennis team where our courts were being renovated. So our training time was 5 to 7 or 8 in the morning every day. I was getting up at like 4:30 every morning, it was kind of a whirlwind. I look back and I'm like, wow, how did we really get through that? And then as my dad said, I ended up having a great season. I was undefeated. We won Ivies. Like those things never should have happened with the environment that I was truly in. But in a lot of ways, I think my junior tennis experience really trained me for that type of stress. I don't think I would have gotten through that without having had the type of schedule and the type of training and the type of coaches and mental training that I had gone through. So I look back at my Yale experience, at least from an academic and social perspective, as being unbelievable. I truly loved Yale. I felt happy there. I grew into myself and my interests. I fell in love with photography. I also only played 2 out of my 4 years. I didn't completely see eye to eye with the coach there. I felt like being at Yale allowed me to finally pursue academic interests that I had always had my whole life. I mean, as Jenna said, we both had interests that it was difficult sometimes to navigate. And I had always put tennis first, and I finally put my school first and fell in love with art. And now I work in the arts. So I think for me, it was a wonderful growth experience, and I wouldn't change any of it, even the negativity around my tennis, perhaps.
Oh, well said. And for you, Jenna?
Yeah. So I moved across the country from California to New Haven, Connecticut, never having seen snow actually falling from the sky before.
Yeah, me either.
So that I vividly remember the first snow at school. So not only are we dealing with a totally different climate and environment there, but also the school was quite challenging. So freshman year, it was hard. I don't know if I've spoken to anyone who said freshman year was easy for various things. For me, the school, like I went from being like a straight A, 4.2 GPA student to like really struggling in some of my classes and not getting straight A's. And then being like, am I even supposed to be here right now? What's happening? And people weren't, I don't know if imposter syndrome hadn't been coined yet or like I'd never heard of it, but I was definitely feeling it. I think people talk a lot more about it now, but people didn't talk about it at that time. So I was like, do I even belong to be here? and then all alongside that as well, I was really truly injured for the first time in my life. Like I'd had small injuries before, but it was like rest for a week and you'll be fine. And this was the first time I really experienced like going to the doctors and they don't know what's wrong. And I can't cut my food. Like I can't write. It was really bad, to try to manage that. So I spent most of my time, in the gym trying to get fit. Cause like at least the wrist, like it doesn't affect you so much when you're running and things like that. So trying to up my fitness. And then also the other portion of my time was spent trying to rehab the wrist and going to doctors and getting MRIs and all the shots. And it was a lot to manage in the first year. that out is, of the home.
That really is.
Yeah.
If you were to talk to a young person who's on this track, you know, so they're playing junior tennis these days and they're interested in to moving to a good college, what would be the one, if you could offer one quality to that person, what do you think that quality would be that you gained that you would say, this is a quality to look for, or this is what I experienced?
That's a good question.
You mean quality of the school itself that you're looking for?
No. So like my career, I would consider tennis open to me, to myself.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I became, awareness would be the quality. Right. So it's like, I got to learn about myself. I got to learn about how I have to interact in life. You taught me lots of different things. Discipline would be another one, but I'm just looking for one for now. I know that's not as easy just to think about on the spot, but if there is one that pops into your head, or even if you've got one, Tom, that you saw the quality that you wanted to instill in the girls, and it may be different for each of them.
I have one. Mm-hmm. I think it really made me realize that I can really depend on myself to get through any sort of challenge, hardship, task, like being out there on the court by yourself. Like, it's just you, like, even with all your coaches and your training, yes, everything, when you're out there playing a match, it's all on you, and you really have to be able to trust yourself and depend on yourself. And I think when I see my friends struggle with that concept, like not sure if they can do it or something else, it's hard. You can't really teach someone that. I think tennis taught me that.
Work.
Yeah. And I would kind of piggyback on that and say, for me, one thing is self-reflection, and having the ability to kind of look at a situation, figure out what's going on, how I'm participating in whatever that situation is, being able to handle constructive criticism in a way that I know will help me move forward positively. I think that's something that you learn at a very young age in the junior tennis world, is if you can't handle constructive criticism, and know, at least from a situation in which, like, you trust your coach, you think your coach has your best intentions. I mean, that for me has served me very well in my own career, is just being able to self-reflect and know that I have that ability to handle those types of critiques and know that I can help me moving forward.
Very nice. And what about for you, Tom? What were you?
Well, I would add to that, I've always subscribed to the Aristotelian philosophy of balance in terms of human being development. Mm-hmm. So Aristotle really focused on the scholarly aspect and the philosophical aspect, but he also focused on the athletic aspect, which some philosophers at that time didn't. So I've always kind of leaned in that direction because I felt the balance. And as the four of us know, the things that you learn competing in sport are life lessons. And as both girls echoed, you take those into the world for the rest of your life, and you can draw on them, whether it's about winning or losing, which I think is another element that I think would be worthwhile to discuss, how much we as a society put way too much importance on winning. And that definitely is involved in junior tennis. One side note, the coach at Yale kind of was disingenuous with Lauren and us, in the sense that she was upset with Lauren that Lauren was having a good time on the tennis court and smiling. And if I look at, when I looked at the pictures of the team in action, she was the only one smiling and having a good time. And the coach didn't like it. It's supposed to be business and serious. Mm-hmm. And that's just a completely different philosophical aspect. For me as a coach, it's pretty evident that if someone enjoys what they're doing, they're engaged. And if they're engaged, they have focus. And that's what we all need to attain and achieve anything in life. You've got to be focused. But if it comes because you want to play because you want your parents' attention, or the parent is living vicariously through their children, or it has to be serious and it has to be this way, that's not a philosophy that I subscribe to. And I think that's one of the things that permeates our society in America in all sports, that the parents, it's all about winning and it's not about learning. It's and also with the development of junior tennis, I've been lucky enough to help a lot of kids get to D1 schools like SC and UCLA and Stanford and a lot of esteemed universities. But when the parents have come to me, I've said, listen, if you want you want your kid to be top 10 in the 10s and 12s, go to somebody else because I don't coach that game.
Yeah.
If you want to talk about development for the future, and if you want to put winning aside right now and ranking aside, we can make a go of it. And I think that's one of the big problems with American tennis is they make the ranking such a big deal that the kids can't stop looking at the ranking. And it's so now if they're playing, if they're 20 in Southern California and they're playing 50 and they lose the first set, they're just under incredible pressure because they don't want to lose to somebody lower because the rankings are so important. So what do? They play safe. And they don't develop their game. I got to win. So I don't want to take any chances. I don't want to come to the net. I don't want to hit the overhead out of the air. I don't want to go for my second serve, on and on and on. And the system is just turned upside down and it's just wrong. And the other countries that do much better than us, they don't have the development program. And the last word I'll say is the last American male Grand Slam winner was in 2003, Andy Roddick. And and that pretty much says enough. I mean, a couple of years ago, Spain, which is the size of Rhode Island, had 10 male players in the top 100, and we had 3. So the way that we go about it and the abuse, and as the girls talked about the pressure out there, like, I got to perform or this school won't be interested in me, or I got to perform because I don't want to deal with the loss of my ranking, or I don't want my parents to be pissed, or I don't want my coach to be pissed.
Yes.
It's just, you're not playing for the enjoyment and what you can learn and what's the long term. And so the game needs more coaches like you, Mark, and enough said.
Yeah, no, thanks. I think it's really true, Tom. I mean, I do my best to brainwash everyone to
well, you brainwashed me, man.
It's about the process. And I do that from a toddler to someone top 10 in the world. It's a process, you know, and working it each day. And the one thing that I do recall working with both you girls is I actually didn't put a lot in. It was more like I was taking stuff out and simplifying the game. You know, it was like serve here, look for the open court, go there. You know, it's pattern play, the simplistic stuff. You didn't need to hit the winner. You didn't need to hit the big shot because consistency first, placement second, and power third. You know, and I think in juniors it's opposite. You know, people want the big power Hollywood shot. They want to go for it. But you girls were super smart and you'd known enough about tennis. So when I would communicate these things to you, I knew you could pick it up very, very quickly. And just on our, we're coming to time here. Just girls, if you could just share to kind of where you're at today and you know, post university and where you're at in your careers.
Sure. I can start. I graduated from school and, went straight into the art world. I've actually been working in the American wing at the Metropolitan Museum of Art for 10 years now. And during my time at the museum, I also went back to grad school. I was working full-time and going back to school part-time, which again, I think my junior tennis and all of that training really helped me time manage that experience. Mm-hmm. It was a 3-year part-time program and it was a master's in visual arts administration from NYU. So I work in the arts. I enjoy project managing exhibitions and installations and collections, and kind of being bringing a lot of different types of people together to achieve the same goal is something I really find very rewarding, and things that are mission driven that the public can enjoy and learn something and feel very inspired by is really what I think motivates me in that space specifically.
Lovely. And you just got married.
Yes. And we just bought a house and moved out to Long Island as well. So a lot of change.
Oh, wow.
But we still play tennis. That is definitely a huge part of our lives. So
that's lovely to hear. And what about for you, Jenna?
Yeah, I graduated, I majored in architecture in school. And so I started working at an architecture firm in New York City right after school. And it happens that the firm I work at, about halfway through my working there, the founding partner of the firm became the first female dean of the Yale School of Architecture. Her name's Deborah Burke. She's fantastic. Mm-hmm. And so I ended up, after 4 years of working at her firm, I ended up going back to grad school back at Yale. So I was there for 3 years, getting my master's of architecture, and I was going through some personal things, and I really kind of came full circle with arts and like health and wellness. So to me, like, being an athlete, you really have to be in touch with how your body is and your health and everything going on with you. And so I started focusing on in my work how architecture affects occupant health and wellness, both physically and mentally, with like the psychology of it. And so nice. I was studying that in school, and did an independent research project on it and presented it at the Academy of Neuroscience for Architecture. And so when I graduated, actually, not quite at the height of the pandemic, but I graduated in May of 2020. I returned back to Deborah's firm, and have been working remotely for them, but still working on this concept of health and wellness in architecture, and seeing where that takes me.
Oh, that's just wonderful. Well, I want to say, just, you know, as your friends and friends of the family, it's always just been such an honor to know all of you. And, you know, I know coming along at the stage that I did, which is a very transitional stage in a young person's life, you know, you have wonderful parents. I have this phrase that it takes a diamond to cut another diamond. I don't know if you know that, but it takes a lot of pressure, you know, and I think you're fortunate enough, although I'm sure at times you wanted to run away from your father, he brought that pressure with mindfulness, you know, and consideration. It wasn't just pressure to win. It was pressure to be the best you both could be in your life and whatever you apply yourself to. And I think that's definitely showing up in a lot of your achievements. And I also think, as you were alluding to, Jenna, earlier, when the challenges do hit, because there's no one who, I don't know anyone who's not challenged, from whatever perspective, if it's from health or relationships or career, that you have that adversity, you have that toughness inside of you to pull up your bootstraps, so to speak, and to get on with it. And that takes great courage and will, you know, and you girls have that in spades. So, thank you very much. If you have just a lasting comment that you would like to leave us with for each of you, please go ahead and let's do that now.
Well, I'd just like to say thank you much for having us, and also for your involvement in all of our lives. You've been a great mentor, and you're the real deal. You're just a humble, intelligent cat, and I love our conversations, and I really value your friendship, and I guess the only thing regarding tennis is I think it's really important to balance the individual sport with the team sport. So as the girls alluded to, zonal competition training center, you get to be part of the team, and that's a nice balance. But I also think when you compete in an individual sport, especially one as physical as tennis, because I look at tennis as physical boxing without the punishment of getting hit, right? Your body gets abused because of the training and whatnot, but you learn things out there, as the girls have alluded to, that it's not easy to learn in a team sport. I pursued professional baseball, and I'd have a game where I'd just be 5 for 5 and hit 2 home runs and we lost, and I felt like crap because we didn't win. And so I think that aspect of a sport like tennis, and then it's also a sport you can play the rest of your life. If you're a football player, you need 11 guys on a team. And if you're a basketball player, you can play 3-on-3. And if you're a baseball player, you need 18 players. But with tennis, you need one other person that's interested in having a hit.
No, lovely, lovely said. What about for you girls? Any lasting comments here?
I mean, I think we focused a lot on the challenges of starting out in the sport so young and playing such in a competitive way. But I think that there are a lot of benefits too. I think you learn a lot about yourself and about people, and you also are able to get outside and not be staring at a computer screen or a video screen. I think that's really important for young people today. So I think that there are a lot of really positive, exciting things about the sport that you carry with you throughout your whole life. And I would highly encourage people who are starting out or maybe thinking, oh, I don't know if this is for me, to really push through that and play this sport, because it's fantastic.
I thought too, Jenna, that you learned a lot about fashion because you always had the best outfit on.
Thank you. I did care about the dresses.
Me too.
And Lauren.
Yeah, we were actually known for our vintage tennis dresses. It was kind of a funny thing. I would say, just personally speaking, that my experience with you, Mark, was just really transformative for me, especially as you were saying. I mean, you came into our lives at such an impressionable age. And I think for me, you taught me so much about, as I was saying, self-reflection and awareness. And I just really look back at that time and just appreciate your support and openness for a lot of questions that like a 14, 15, 16 year old has about life, trying to figure things out like that. And I think for me, what I realized during that time is that tennis is a wonderful sport and I love that, but it really truly teaches you so much about life and who you are and that awareness. And I think being able to understand that and have those conversations with you was truly magical. And I mean, obviously I still call you all the time when I have things in my life that I would love your opinion on, but I think truly it speaks to the fact that I just felt that was something I could talk about with you. And I think that that's so important, that it's not all about the tennis. It's about becoming the best person, the best contributor to this world that we live in and making it a better place.
Well, on that note, I'd say thank you. And I hope our listeners here could gain lots and lots of values from lots of different angles. If you're on this journey or of competitive tennis and looking at college, but way beyond that, it's really, these are life shared stories around how to get from here to there. How do you do the things that you love? How do you overcome challenge? How do you do that as a family, you know, and come out the other side still growing and still learning, but with these greater wisdoms that sit with you because you've gone through the experiences. So thanks again for being my guest, and until next time.
Yeah, we'll talk soon.
Thanks,
Mark.
Cheers, mate.